Welcome to Frontside, the podcast, episode 12. This week, it's a very special Canadian edition of Ember.js. I have with me Mixonic.
Howdy.
Also known in the real world as Matthew Beal, and MMUN, who is Martin. I forgot your last name.
Munoz.
Munoz. Okay, great. So are you guys both in Canada right now?
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah,
I'm in Toronto.
Yeah, I'm in scenic Chile, Montreal.
Perfect. So yesterday, kind of the news got out about 1.8. 1.8's been kind of a work in progress for the past 6 weeks or so as part of the Ember.js release process. If you're not familiar, the Ember team kind of works to try and just release whatever's ready every 6 weeks, and we use feature flags to kind of protect that release cycle. So if something's not ready, we just turn the feature flag off. The cool thing about 1.8, I think for most people, like for most people who kind of are just building apps, not too concerned with internals, is that these metamorph tags kind of went away. So the metamorph tags are, if you've written an Ember app or kind of seen a demo or anything like that, the metamorph tags are what wraps your handlebars templates. So anywhere you have a binding, there will be some script tags that say like data script morph or something like that. And that's kind of how Ember in the past has been able to do this two-way data binding in your templates. So it would say like, hey, if your data changed, find the appropriate morph and kind of re-render that piece of HTML. So that's gone in 1.8. But we still don't have HTML bars. So what made that possible, that kind of reworking? It sounds like from just kind of commits I've been seeing going by that the way Ember, the views internally work is changing to adopt for HTML bars. And that allowed us to at least get rid of seeing script tags in the DOM.
Yeah, so I think there's a couple things that HTML bars is in aggregate. And the one that people most commonly think about is the templating engine that replaces handlebars. And that's definitely a super important part. And I think we talked to Yehuda about this the other day, and the original inspiration for all of the HTML bar stuff is not any of the performance that we think about as like the big feature now, but it was the ability to be able to do like href equals curly curly some URL value curly curly. Like, we think of that now as a side effect of all this other work that we're doing, because that alone would be far simpler to do. But that was the original thing that kind of drove us down this path of how can we make a templating engine that actually understands HTML instead of just being a string concatenation engine. And so to get a templating engine like that folded back into Ember, we had to do some other architectural things in Ember to make that possible. One thing is that Ember's rendering pipeline was all string concatenation based. So whenever you rendered a page, it would render all the child views and create one big old string and then drop that as inner HTML into the page. So our build pipeline has to slowly like move over to a DOM focused thing, where instead each individual view generates a piece of DOM and then it assembles a tree of DOM inside of the rendering pipeline. And that's what we've been calling metal views, and is the big thing that went out with 1.8. Is this new refactored rendering pipeline. Another part of HTML bars, so those are two things, the templating library and then the way that we assemble templates. So the library means that our templates themselves are DOM, and metal views means that the assembly of all of our templates is also done in DOM. So that's like our full DOM pipeline. A third part is morphs themselves. So there's a library called Metamorph that Yehuda, I'm not quite sure who else needs to get credit for Metamorph, originally put together, that used, like you were saying, Stanley, the script tags to identify content that was going to change. And the morph library is kind of a rewrite based on lessons from Metamorph, and it has a magic trick. Instead of using script tags, it uses blank text nodes. So they're invisible, and you can't see them when you're in the inspector, and you are probably not going to run into them when you're doing your own CSS or your own JavaScript, because they're text nodes. They're not DOM elements. So they're really great and stay out of our way. But we still actually have those markers in the DOM. It's just that now you can't see them and don't need to think about them as much. I think those are maybe the three things which were originally big things that went into this. And then, Martin, some of your streams work is like a big part of the HTML bars thing, too.
Yeah, Martin, could you kind of explain to us kind of like what does Ember think of as streams? Because I know at least in the JavaScript community, there's several definitions of streams. You have streams 1 and 2 from Node, and soon, or maybe they already released it, streams 3. You have kind of like Rx observables types of streams. So what does Ember think of a stream, and how does that kind of play into the HTML bars rewrite?
Martin always forgets to turn off mute. Is he even here?
Oops. There he is. Yeah. Sorry about that. yeah, we have our own ad hoc notion of streams as well. So a stream is basically something that in Ember world is something that will emit a notification. And you can subscribe to this notification. And when the notification hits you, you can then request the value. You don't have to, but you can. So it's a lot like computed properties in this sense, and notify property change and observers, except that they are not bound to the KVO paradigm. You don't have to listen to a key on an object. You just listen to the stream object itself. So it's sort of detached from any particular object. And this allows us to really unify a lot of the concepts in the templating layer. One nice thing that is a side effect of this is, for instance, right now it is difficult to implement bound query parameters, or sorry, not query parameters, bound sub-expressions in general. And if you imagine a sub-expression in the templating layer as just taking a bunch of streams and then generating one stream, which is the final value that will be used for the next slot that it goes into, then it just makes the concepts a bit more unified and allows us to implement things in a more generic way.
Yeah, that's a good example, because the sub expressions
delete a bunch of code.
The sub expressions don't have a property at all.
I'm gonna back up before you keep going on. So when we say a sub expression, we're talking about a handlebars sub-expression, and that means, so in handlebars, to output values to your template, you use double curlies and then either a helper or something inside. So a sub-expression means you put like another sort of value or helper inside parentheses inside your double or triple curlies.
Mm-hmm. So where you would normally put a parameter value or a hash value, you can put an entire parenthesized expression, helper expression, much like query params is done right now. That takes an expression and it runs the query params helper and it returns a query params object to the link to helper. But the way that is done is it's sort of very specific to Ember, and you can't build your own helpers. Users can't build their own helpers that do this very easily, and streams will allow you to, you know, create your own sub-expression helpers that you can distribute and be used in other places that are useful, and they would remain bound, which is the nice thing.
So as far as streams goes, that mostly like yay internal and kind of like yay for, you know, people implementing sort of these view level plugins, or do you think that'll maybe come out as like a framework level concept and maybe like a future release of Ember?
I think that what you said is right. It's yay for plugin developers as well. There's other ideas that we can build off of. There's an RFC for block params that would essentially require streams for its implementation, and that would help plug or component makers to build more composable components. We're going to flesh that story out a bit more in the future, I guess. But there is also opportunities to use streams in the framework to unify more concepts as well. For instance, bindings right now are eager. So when you write something like foo binding equals bar in your template, that'll create a binding between two properties, foo and parent view dot bar. And when one changes, it will eagerly then change the other side of that binding, you know, subject to the run loop. But and there's performance implications for these types of things. Whereas if they were using streams, then it could be, or computed properties, which came later than bindings originally, then this process could be done lazily. And these sort of transfer between the two properties would only happen when you request it to happen. So when you were to say get foo, it would then say, oh, okay, I need to actually look up bar, kind of like an alias. So there are opportunities to unify even more concepts in the framework itself that we're investigating.
Okay. So Charles from Austin, Texas writes in. it's hard to keep a straight face doing that. Historically, the rendering of HTML in Ember has been a monolith. Chunks of DOM are swapped in and out wholesale with very application-level visibility into or control over this process. With all the work that's been going on lately, what public APIs do you imagine for working with the view layer to extend how it mutates the DOM to insert, update, or remove elements? And I'm not sure I totally understand the question here, but I'm guessing part of this means, like, if you were making your own sort of each helper that maybe did like a React style diff instead of like caring about the underlying data, it just says like, did the DOM change, or if the data changed, you know, what in the rendering tree changed?
Yeah,
yeah, I'll stick with that one. Then I have another example.
Do you want to take it, Matt?
I think you can. There's a few things that come to mind. One is that the rendering pipeline as it used to exist prior to the Metal Views refactor was certainly monolithic. I guess in a way you can still consider it monolithic, that in that there's only one code path that we go through. When we're doing a re-render, when we're taking a tree of views, or we're taking the entire tree of views and rendering them, we still only really go through like one big old loop that used to be a recursive process, and now it's a flat process, but we still have one loop that we go through. However, one of the things we've done is move more and more of that logic into the loop and away from the views themselves. So the views are becoming more and more dumb, and they don't really know how to render themselves, with the aim of us being able to create views that live on top of other abstractions. So if you want to take a view, right now it sits on top of the Ember rendering layer, which by default will use HTML bars. If you want to swap that out for a pipeline where you could write components, but use Mithril or React as your like DOM diffing layer below them, that kind of thing is like definitely still tricky to pull off, but is the kind of thing that we should be able to pull off on top of the new rendering pipeline that would have been, you know, nigh impossible on top of the old one. I think that's a little bit lower level maybe than the specific use cases you might be thinking about. But it's important to note that like the old rendering pipeline, like we said, was very, very string focused. So when you talk about the ability to delegate certain parts of the DOM management to something else, we didn't really have the ability to say, at this certain DOM node, I want to hand off control to someone else. And then I want to pick up the control again later on. So it would have been very difficult for us to say, on this view, I want to use a Polymer component and hand things off to the Polymer component and let that take control of the rest of the rendering for like this part of the DOM. Now that we actually understand and use nodes as our endpoints for our views, it's trivial for us to say, okay, here's an Ember view, and now at this morph, I want to hand off control to Polymer or React or whatever you want to hand off control to. So I think it opens the doors for like really exciting integrations at the component level. And ideally, that's like something that we kind of thought would be a dream in 2014, and maybe next year will be kind of a possibility to be able to actually have component level interop between frameworks. I think there's some DOM diffing stuff. Do you want to talk
about DOM diffing? Well, so I missed one of the major reasons that we restarted off with the streams work. And that is we use streams now to be able to pin property lookups in the template to the view, as opposed to the context that the view is rendering in. So whereas before, the object would be, if you had a property foo.bar in your template and you had some context object before, you would have foo.bar being bound to the context object directly. But now what the way we do it is we bind context.foo.bar to the view object. Okay, that seems like a not big deal, but what that allows us to do is now swap out the context object and leave the view intact, and all the bindings will update. So this is a step in the direction of making list view much simpler, for example, because now you can more easily reuse your item views and just swap out the context, and all the bindings will just update. No need to re-render that view.
Yeah, we kind of think about this as a DOM diffing or virtual DOM kind of parallel concept. But in fact, we have no virtual DOM necessarily. We don't have like React does, an actual construction in memory of the entire DOM tree. But we actually view that as an asset. So a handlebars template has two parts to it. An HTML bars template has two parts to it. The first part is the generation of the static DOM, and that's DOM that's never going to change. It's written into your template. You have a P tag with an I tag inside of it. Those two tags are never going to be modified by anything. So we know that we can cache them and keep them around in memory. And the next time we want them, we can just clone the tree that they were part of and put them out again. And then we have the second step, which is hydration, where we go through that static DOM that's being cached and we attach the dynamic data to it. And so for us to perform the kind of DOM diffing, I want to update everything without actually rendering any new HTML onto the page. All we need to do is touch all of those data points, which are all streams, and tell them all to go ahead and update their values if they have new values. We don't actually need to render any HTML or worry about what the DOM tree looks like. Instead, we have a view tree, and that view tree has an understanding of what dynamic data is on top of each view.
Mm-hmm. In response to the question itself regarding each, we find that a very valuable use case to be able to just swap out arrays and have the right thing happen and not have to worry about, the very specifics of how you should replace each item, that kind of stuff, because it becomes very tedious for the developer. And it's just a much better programming model to just, with the sort of React style, here's the data, render it, and do this in the optimal way. We have some spikes in this direction, and they look really promising. It's not that hard of a problem.
So I think I should kind of elaborate. So if you're not familiar with Ember, or you haven't had a large list of stuff that you're rendering with the each helper, one problem with each is, say in my controller, I have a list of posts, and the property is called posts. So I say each post in post. I might create a table, I might create a list, I might do a lot of things with that DOM. The problem is that if this post is a computed property of stuff and I return a new array, so in JavaScript you can compare object equality, I think it's double equals, right? Or is it triple equals?
Yeah, triple for object.
So object equality means, is this reference the same? So does this point at the same point of memory, which generally in JavaScript you don't have to check for or care about. But in at least right now in Ember, if you return a new array, so you have more of a functional style approach for your computed properties rather than the computed macros, which kind of do some mutation in place for you.
That's exactly right.
If you return a new array right now in Ember, it will sort of remove all the old DOM nodes and generate new ones, even if no data changed or just a small piece of the data changed.
Yeah, that's exactly right.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, and then the abstraction that Streams introduces that allows us to deal with this is that we no longer are coupled to binding that original piece of data. So the problem in old Ember is that, or in Ember today even, is that we're actually observing that array, that literal array. And when we're able to swap that out with a stream, then we have an opportunity in the stream to perform what like the different kinds of modification that we want to, so that we don't need to necessarily blow away the entire downstream world that's dependent on that object.
So kind of an exciting thing about 1.8 is I think overall there have been some performance gains. I know we lost a little performance in some areas. Can you guys talk kind of about performance? Like what changed? What's your process for? I've been seeing a lot of work on the core team go around performance, and it's been kind of neat to watch and see how Ember kind of is looking to improve performance versus you know, at least this is the way I try to improve performance when I'm thinking about it is, like, I have a problem in my app, and it's really slow. So how do you guys go about, like, how do you notice performance problems in Ember itself versus your app? And kind of how do you improve that in Ember?
Yeah, Martin, you wanna kick off? My main overarching strategy for perf is hope Steph does it first.
Yeah, I'm pretty sure 1.8 is the release that has a lot of Steph's work around the run loop and Ember data. So if you use Ember data, you probably notice a big difference.
Yeah, it's Steph and Tuchel. I think a lot of what the way that they're looking at things is if you take or one of the ways that they look at things. I know Steph has like a rather interesting, elaborate process. There are a few things that I can speak about that I know are useful. If you take a look at the profiler, a lot of people go straight to the flame chart, and the flame chart does give you a good, like, very, very high level understanding of what's going on. And for kind of macro performance problems, like, do you have an Ember run loop auto run happening, which can give you a performance penalty that'll be like 20 milliseconds, 30 milliseconds for no benefit at all, probably more than that. So for catching things like that, the flame chart is really fantastic. For catching kind of framework level issues of what are the hot paths and what are those hot paths doing? Are they de-optimizing because either they're like, you know, optimizing and then being de-opted by new argument values or something, or are they just de-optimizing because they're doing something that the browser, that the JIT doesn't like to deal with? If you look at the bottom up view on the profiler instead, that'll give you an idea of how often different things are called and how much time those things take. And I know that that's like a good place to get an understanding of what's happening. In order to actually have that information be meaningful, though, you definitely need like an application that you can look at. And Steph has a perf stress app, which is just an app with a lot of complicated views and a lot of lists on it. And running that app a little bit and letting it churn for a while in your browser and then running profiles on it is a good spot to start if you want to get an understanding of what in the framework is doing well and what's doing ill. I think our larger performance kind of story right now is really around a set of big bets that we're placing on macro wins. So a lot of the things that Steph and Tuchel have been working on lately have been very very micro-focused. It's been how can I tighten this loop or how can I keep this thing from de-opting? We did caching of strings. So if you camel case something in Ember 1.8, that camel case is actually cached, so we don't need to perform the operation again. And then it uses a least recently updated cache to flush them. But the big bets that we're placing are in how we can re-architect to get toward HTML bars and stop using strings so much for composing DOM. And that's kind of like the big spot that will really pay off. So even if we take a step backward in 1.8, if we had taken a step backward in 1.8, as long as it's a tiny step, we're kind of okay with that because we're pretty confident that in 1.10 we'll be able to make a big difference.
Yeah, we're really interested to hear from people if they have to report any issues in performance that we can investigate them. A lot of our tests show that it's as fast, especially with 1.9. We tend to profile in an ad hoc way, and we don't see the issues that other people see. So it'd be really useful to have reports about performance. Something that we're working on is as a performance testing harness so that this becomes more rigorous, but that's still in the works.
Yeah, that'd be great to have.
So if people are noticing issues on performance or want to kind of pitch in, I've seen a couple places where that's been appropriate or stuff like that. One of those is definitely GitHub issues. So if you open a thing and if you tag it with like perf in brackets, like, and you can kind of replicate it in a JS bin, I think that'd be helpful for you guys.
Yeah, the most helpful thing is like a screenshot of before and after of the tree of calls in the profiler, the bottom up self times and all times or whatever it's called, and that helps us to really see immediately what the issues are.
This isn't really, well, it may be an Ember specific question, but it seems like I don't know if you guys have seen Jeff Atwood and Robin Ward from the Discourse team kind of looking at Ember performance on Android, and it's been kind of bad for at least a year or so. I wonder if you guys knew anything about that, or I hear it's like specifically an Android issue, because Jeff kind of posts these the benchmarks for loading the app in iOS, and they're significantly lower than Android.
Yeah.
I don't know much about that myself. I do know that I also experienced this problem, that it's significantly slower. I think it's I thought it was an ARM specific problem.
Yeah, I've actually always on my phone thought that Discourse was a little bit slow. But my phone's an Android and I've never had an iPhone, so I don't know about this glorious world of like 1 second, 2 second render times. I've never seen this. My phone is always like 10 seconds to render a web page. You can fall through that thread if you want to get a lot of good details, but there's some concerns that basically the JITs on ARM are not as well optimized, or the V8 JIT on ARM is not as well optimized as one for x86, which kind of makes sense because you can imagine that, you know, we've got half a decade or something of experience like cranking the hell out of x86 processors to make them perform with JavaScript really well, and just less experience doing that on top of ARM. And maybe the V8 team, because they're so focused on making desktop Chrome, just isn't as invested as the Apple team is, because Apple's, you know, the iPhone is such an important product for them, and so they just haven't invested as much time yet. If you click through to the from that thread, I don't know if you guys can put up a link to that somewhere eventually, yeah, but there's also a link to the actual issue at Chrome, and there's some interesting analysis there from some of the Chrome guys about what's possibly going on. It looks like it's doing some internal opt-in deops in some kind of cycle. Basically, it tries to like opt, realizes it can't, and throws the whole thing out, and then starts the process over again, and there's just a lot of opt-deop churn.
Cool. Do you guys have anything else you want to bring up, or...?
Should have prepared.
We all should have prepared.
I think an interesting thing is that there's been a decent number of folks who have asked about like how they could help out with HTML bars. And giving them an answer in the past has always been really awkward. Neither of us started this project. Like, this is definitely something that we started looking at and decided that we wanted to get into, and not something that we kicked off on our own. And it took us a long time to get up to speed, and a lot of, I think it's safe to say that we like annoyed a lot of people until they gave us their attention. And I don't want to necessarily encourage anyone else to do that, but I think we're getting to a point where it doesn't require so much ramp-up time to actually help out with these things. We're hoping to land one or two helpers for HTML bars that would be good foundational refactors of the existing handlebars helpers over to HTML bars in the next week or two. And given that we do that, there are a lot of things that don't seem like they're directly related that would be really helpful to get done. There's a variety of build tasks that need to happen inside of HTML bars and inside of Ember itself to get those things to be better tested and better distributed. And then once we get the initial helpers, there's a couple helpers in HTML bars that are going to need help being refactored as well. And our timeline is pretty tight to get this done, which is why if it's going to be something that needs, like if you're someone who's going to need a lot of ramp up, then there's probably not time in the next 5 weeks to get you ramped up. But if you're someone who has the time and wants to dive into some of the things that are on the periphery, or has a lot of time and wants to dive into the meat, then we're totally welcoming of that, and you know, reach out and say something. We'll see if there's something that we can task you with, and then if you kick butt on that, we'll try and move forward to something else pretty quickly. It's pretty spooky to say that it's like 5 weeks away. Like five or six weeks away, we got to land this thing inside of Ember. But I know Martin and I are really eager to actually get this like popped off the Ember stack. As a community, like, it feels like we've been kind of stuck on this performance tit for tat.
Mm-hmm.
So React came out and blew all of our minds. It was like this crazy idea that works really, really well. And it was definitely a little bit of a wake-up call for, like, we can do new things are possible, and we can be far more performant than we are now, and that's actually something that we should dive and go after. But it's turned into a little bit of this, oh, I don't want to use Ember because it's slow for rendering a list. And I think the essential value proposition that Ember makes is not about performance in rendering a list. It's a far more meaningful, like, architectural discussion about how we want the web to work. Do you want the web to work as a runtime where I ship you an app just like on your phone and it runs on your browser? Or do you want the web to be a place where we render strings on the servers? They describe a UI that ships down to the client. I definitely like the model of the web that Ember espouses, and I think that's the debate that I want to get back to, is like, shut down this performance conversation so we can move forward again and start talking about like how we want the web to work.
That's awesome. So if my date math is correct, 5 weeks from today is October the 29th. If we release that week, that would be the week of Thanksgiving.
Yeah, it would be a Thanksgiving release, and you can rest assured that there'll probably be a bunch of core members not having turkey because they're still coding.
We should. So I really like that Angular and Ember CLI have been doing named releases for some time now. So maybe this is like the Black Friday release.
Yeah, for sure. I mean, honestly, that's when we the goal then is that HTML bars can branch into beta. So unfortunately, it still wouldn't be until a very merry New Year's that we that HTML bars actually lands in stable. Because of our 12-week cycle, but that would be pretty amazing to kick off 2015 with like a great, really powerful rendering story for Ember.
So as far as people trying out HTML bars in their app, I know I've seen an Ember CLI add-on for HTML bars. Is this something people can kind of do and give feedback about what's broken or not, or would that, you know, be less helpful at this point before 1.10 beta comes out?
Martin, do you want to chat?
Yeah, that was mostly a proof of concept, and it's not really ready to be tested yet, but we hope to land it soon.
It will. Your app will run. It just will have no helpers at all. So as long as
you can bind properties,
yeah,
you also can't use the router.
As long as your Ember application is all static HTML, maybe it will work.
I think that's the new slogan we should adopt for Ember. Like, just put it on the website. Maybe it'll work.
Yeah, one weird performance trick.
So are there any Ember projects or anything you guys want to give a shout out to?
Yeah, if you haven't heard of it yet, I definitely recommend checking out Liquid Fire, one of Ed Faulkner's projects. It's an Ember CLI add-on that helps you do animations, and it's really fantastic, and a lot of good ideas are developing there, and you should definitely check it out if you're doing animations in your app.
Yeah, I guess if I had Liquid Fire is amazing. If I had one shout out, the thing I think to look at would be maybe the Ember RFCs repo. If you're interested in like where Ember is going and what kind of things we're talking about on core as we try and find like a way forward to 2.0 and such, that's really like a great resource where we're kicking around a lot of ideas. And if you have detailed feedback and you do some deep thinking, you can really contribute to the process.
Yeah, the URL is github.com/emberjs/RFCs.
Great. We'll put a link to it in the show notes as well. Great. I think we're out of time. If people want to find you guys on the internet, where can they find you?
I usually blog at a blog called Madheaded, MADHATTED.com. And I'm on Twitter as Mixonic. And yeah, generally on IRC and stuff like that as well. So say hello.
Yeah, you can probably find me most easily on IRC or Twitter as MMUN. Underscore MMUN.
Yeah, I was going to say, I tweeted out the wrong person this morning. So yeah, underscore MM. Martin, Matthew, so good to have you guys on. Thanks.
Thanks.